ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we are reading from Canto 9, Chapter 21, text number 8 to 12. यते सुद्रे तम अन्योगाद अतिथि स्वभिर आवृता राजन मे दियतम मन्नम सगनाय बुभुक्षते। So I'll read the translation and then I'll go on to read the translation of the other verses. And I'll read the last verse as well, the Sanskrit, which is very beautiful. So this verse is translated as, when the Sudra went away, another guest arrived, surrounded by dogs, and said, O King, I and my company of dogs are very hungry. Please give us something to eat. Text number 9. With great respect, King Rantidev offered the balance of the food to the dogs and the master of the dogs who had come as guests. The king offered them all respects and obeisances. Text number 10. Thereafter, only the drinking water remained and there was only enough to satisfy one person. But when the king was just about to drink it, a Chandala appeared and said, O King, although I am low-born, kindly give me some drinking water. Text number 11. Aggrieved at hearing the pitiable words of the poor, fatigued Chandala, Maharaj Rantidev spoke the following nectarian words. These are the nectarian words which I will repeat the Sanskrit and then the translation as well.
Nakamayeham gatimishvarat param ashtardhi yuktam apunar bhavam va artim prapadye khiladeha bhajam antastito yena bhavanti aduka.
And this is the nectarian prayers which was spoken of. He says, I do not pray to the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the eight perfections of mystic yoga, not for salvation from repeated birth and death. I want only to stay among all the living entities and suffer all distress on their behalf so that they may be freed from suffering. The purport to this is written by Srila Prabhupada, says, Vasudev Datta made a similar statement to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, requesting the Lord to liberate all living entities in his presence. Vasudev Datta submitted that if they were unfit to be liberated, he himself would take all their sinful reactions and suffer personally so that the Lord might deliver them. A Vaishnav is therefore described as being paradukha dukhi, very much aggrieved by the suffering of others. As such, a Vaishnav engages in activities for the real welfare of human society. So the first thought that crossed my mind when I read about this narration was that it all seems too hyped up. It seems too unreal for my mind. King Rantidev, this is the option that I thought for him, could have easily asked one of his servants, please get some water, give it to him, please get some food. In fact, in the verse number 11, I was wondering as to, the translation reads, aggrieved at hearing the pitiable words. I thought King Rantidev would have been aggrieved by hearing the words of this person, that give me something. But here, he is aggrieved by hearing the pitiable words of the poor, fatigued Chandala. Maharaj Rantidev himself should have been fatigued by now. So, this seems so hyped up to me. But when we go into the further depth of things, and when we listen to such historical events as this, we are able to analyze what an impact it has. Just because I feel in a particular way, we should not allow our weakness and our gullibilities to cover the real reason as to why this event has happened. And it will also obliterate our understanding as to what we could learn from this event. So, such historical narrations, these beautiful pastimes must be discussed, because they will stay with us for a long, long period, for a long, long time, just as they have stayed over the ages, the various yugas. So why this hype? If we find that in reality also, life moves in shocks and fractures. If you've seen a ECG, our heart, you know, the ECG goes something like this, and then something like this. And society as a whole and historical events also move in fractures. So there are very, very large impactful events that shape history. There'll be a world war, there'll be a great depression, there'll be a massive tsunami. And that's how life and history, and that's how society moves, in fractures. Very big shocks, then it moves normally, and then again very big shocks. And so also, our own personal lives, they move in shocks. Very extreme events take place, which are like life-defining moments. Someone loses a parent, someone married, that is also a life-defining moment. You know, you have a child, you go overseas on a different job. All these are life-defining moments, and these are the fractures that I am talking of. Now, there are two ways that I could have looked at this hyped-up event, so-called hyped-up event in my understanding. I could have focused on this as a normal event. But the other way around was to study the extremes. And it's an anomaly that, you know, unless we study the extremes, we don't know what normal is. Unless you had disease, we would not know what health is. So there is need to study the extremes. You would only know your friendship when your friend gets tested in a tough circumstances. Not under the rosy glow of, you know, daily friendship and daily stuff. It doesn't get tested then. So we need to study these extremes. And these are the extremes which leave amazing impact on us. Here in the purport, Prabhupada says that Vasudev Datta, now this is a very extreme request in one sense. He says, let me suffer for all those who are present here. And why? So that all of them can be liberated in your presence. It's a very extreme request. It's not one of those normal requests. You know, please give me some blessings. Please give me a car. Please give me. It's not one of those normal stuff. It's a very extreme request. And to this extreme request, Gauranga Mahaprabhu was amazingly pleased. He was so pleased with Vasudev Datta. We can see in the lives and times of our own very dear founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, Krishna could have easily got him a Air India ticket. Come on, please, you know, spare him the misery of going by Jaladuta. He could have done that. Krishna could have probably arranged a lakh or 2 lakhs or a couple of crore rupees. You know, he arranged it afterwards. Even now he could have arranged it so that Prabhupada, instead of going with those measly $7, which at that time translated to 40 rupees and currently it must be worth about 325 rupees. You go to America. I wouldn't dare to step out of my house without a 500 rupee note in my pocket. I would feel so uncomfortable. But still, Prabhupada had virtually nothing there when he landed. He didn't know whether to go right or left. Very extreme situation. Staying in the midst of people who, okay, sort of faintly respected him, but had no idea of his philosophy. And even for the next 1 year or 1.5 year or so many years to come by, he had what? He was in the midst of meat eaters and gamblers and, you know, those who believed in free sex and drugs. And he stayed in the Bowery. Such an extreme situation. Prabhupada could have easily stayed back. But he underwent this extreme situation, just like Vasudev Datta said, you know, let all the miseries come upon me. Similarly, Prabhupada underwent all these miseries. He didn't have a mridanga to talk of. Hardly any godbrothers coming forward to help him. But still, he took it upon himself, all these miseries, just so that he could liberate the suffering souls and carry out the orders of his Guru Maharaj. And what did Krishna do? It's often repeated. By Prabhupada has said that, you know, he took away my couple of sons, but he has given me so many of you. And that's what Krishna did. Krishna glorified Prabhupada for the ages to come. And this is, the reason is because of this extreme event, the extreme style and manner in which the ISKCON movement came about. And the extreme conditions from which it came about. Just like the way Rantidev underwent this very extreme situation. You're hungry for 42 days and then whatever is with you is also taken away. Very extreme situation. And the height of extremity is that he was, as I said, aggrieved at hearing the pitiable condition of that chandala. That's beyond my comprehension. But actually, the demigods, they wanted to glorify Rantidev. They wanted to glorify his compassion. For all times to come now, Rantidev and this event is a historical event. If you were to search Rantidev on Google, you would find at least about 444,000 hits. And I was trying to read as to what they were talking. And most of the people were talking of at least this thing as a moral story, you know, especially the children stuff, where they talk of how guest reception is to be done. There was a farmer who was asked by his friend, why do you make your son to work so hard and toil in the fields? Why? Your land is very fertile. you have enough water, but still, and the crops will grow anyway. So the farmer gave a very beautiful reply. He said, I'm not cultivating the soil, I'm cultivating my son. In a similar manner, Rantidev was not just simply receiving guests. He was setting a tradition, he was setting the rules of how to receive and what is guest reception. This is like a Shastric event on guest reception. So also Srila Prabhupada was cultivating a culture. He was not simply teaching, or he was not simply just giving what he already knew. He was bringing about a cultural change. And it is true that a big man is needed to bring about this sort of a culture shock. If you were to open the newspapers, and on the second or third page, most of the accidents that have taken place on the day before or day ago are out there. And most times, the headlines will read, bus rams into bike. So, it is never that the bike is ever blamed. Never. It's the big bus that is always, it has to take the blame, that this bus rammed into the bike. It's because it is big in size. So anything that is done by such people as Rantidev become like the standard. They become like gold standards because he is big. In fact, Rantidev was not an ordinary person. And his subjects were not ordinary people. They were all devotees. And when they saw this event happening, and when they heard about this, they became all that much more attached to him. They realized what his compassion was. They all became devotees. It is said by Sukhdev Goswami in the Bhagavatam that Rantidev was such a devotee of the Lord that Maya Devi could not even stand in front of him. There was no chance. In fact, we all have to be thankful to Parikshit Maharaj when he was the recipient of a poor guest reception. And then he went on to ask, and the Bhagavatam is available to us. That was a moment of poor guest reception. And he was so hurt with that poor guest reception. Not a glass of water for me? And the entire Bhagavatam came about. And Srila Prabhupada in the first canto, in the 18th chapter, in the 28th verse, gives a very nice purport. He says that even an enemy, when he comes to your house, should be received very nicely. He or she must be made to feel comfortable. And even if a person is very poor, the least he can do is three things, which are not at all costly. He can offer a glass of water. He can offer a place to be seated. There were straw mats, not sofas at that time. So he can offer a place to be seated. And the last one is very beautiful. He can offer sweet words of inquiry. Three things. And Prabhupada writes in the concluding line. He says, anyone can do these three things. It does not cost. Anyone can do these three things. In fact, Jarasandh is one very good example. I mean, he may be a bad one for many other things, but we can draw out of some things. When Jarasandh welcomed the Pandavas and Krishna, he knew that these are my enemies, but he welcomed them very nicely. During the day they would fight, But in the evening, there would be great guest reception for them as good friends. So despite them being enemies, Jarasandha actually received them very nicely. He set the standard for this particular verse. But there is one guest who doesn't need to be received nicely, who needs to be straightened out, and that is our minds. Especially my mind keeps going here and there. And in this day and age of packaged homes, packaged deals, packaged tours, you know, internet data packets, you know, everything comes about in small packets. Imagine we are sitting in this very nice atmosphere. Prabhu's in their spotless kurtas and Mataji is all in, you know, dressed in Vedic way. This lovely atmosphere. And if my mind was to be asked to make, you know, to chant even one round, it would probably take more than 10 minutes. Because even the Hare Krishna Mahamantra comes in packets to me. So it would be something like Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. This Prabhuji always comes late, you know. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I wish the air conditioning was on today. Krishna, Krishna, Hare, Hare. There's so many of the Prabhus are not present here today. Hare Ram, Hare Ram. Ram, Ram, Hare, Hare. This Prabhu does give nice class. Yeah, but he has no humility. Ram, Ram, Hare, Hare. They don't know how good a class I can give. So this, even the Mahamantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare, Hare. It comes in these packets. And imagine what we are doing to these two guests who are sitting within our hearts, the Super Soul and the Guru Tattva that is sitting there. How they must be feeling. I've been telling this person to chant so nicely, but you know, he's getting these packets. Huh? And what if one day they decided, what if one day Guru decided that, oh Super Soul, what we will do is, we will implant a small broadcast machine into this person. Okay? So, whatever he speaks, that will of course come out, but the real thought will also come out. It would be a disaster. I would say, oh Mataji, you sing so beautifully. But the real thought would come out, but you have no bhava in your singing. What is the use? Or I would say, Prabhu, your class was very good. And the broadcast message, internal broadcast would be, but where is your philosophical understanding? And that verse you quoted was terribly wrong. Out of context. So if, what a situation it would be if these real thoughts came out. The mind is extremely difficult to control. In fact, my mind tends to become the head of quality control. And it's very, very merciful upon myself and merciless upon the others. He should have done that. The only way that I think, one of the ways is to serve, to chant, to read, and to be together in association of devotees. A lot has been talked of association. We know that it is extremely powerful. And I'll add one more analogy to this association thing, and you know, share with you from my business context as to how this association is so powerful. I have a business in life sciences, and I sell something called deep freezers. These deep freezers can take the temperature down to minus 86. Ice actually becomes ice at 0 degrees centigrade. Your normal refrigerators can take you down till minus 18 only. And it is very difficult to hold ice for a long time. Now imagine we are talking of minus 86. Now one of my clients asked me, what if the electricity was to go off? How long do you think would the stuff inside remain at minus 86? So this was quite a question to me. I had not, you know, known the reply to this. So I went back to the manufacturer and I asked him this question. I said, what is the holdover time of your deep freezer? Until what time after the electricity goes off can it retain the minus 86? So he said, 2 hours. The insulation is so good that it can retain that temperature for minus 86 for the next 2 hours. And I said, what happens thereafter? He said, thereafter, within the next 2 hours, the temperatures will fall to minus 60 and then there'll be a rapid drop. Now, here's my question. Let's make this class a little bit interactive. He said, this 2 hours is if the refrigerator was empty. Now, what do you think would be the holdover time if the refrigerator was full of some things? It was like completely chock-a-block. Would it be 2 hours, more or less? Any less? Exactly, that's the way I thought it would be less. No, it is more. The holdover time, if the refrigerator was fully packed with, let's say, whatever your, you know, whatever things, if it was fully packed, the holdover time becomes 10 hours. And I was really amazed at this. And I thought, this is what association means. That if all of us are together, and even if someone attacked us by cutting off the power supply of all these nectarian teachings of the previous acharyas, even if someone tried to cut that off, if we were all together, we would have a chance of surviving 5 times better than if we were alone. This is what my mind needs. Constant association. But I try to dwell further on this deep freezer thing. And I was wondering which of the items would stay for more than 10 hours also. So I asked the manufacturer. He said the item that was at the core would stay for even more than 10 hours at that low temperature. Reason? It was surrounded by others who were actually taking away the heat from that item. And they were melting away, and this one would be the last, the core would be the last to melt away. What does it mean for us? It really means that we have to somehow serve the association and the community of Vaishnavas in such a way that we can come about very close to the core. Very close to the core. It does not mean that we can barge our way inside the core. We cannot. Just like when, if you were to go for a function and you were one of the guests and you took the seat which was right in front, okay, despite knowing that it was reserved for some VIPs or others who were to come, and then some other more important person comes and the host has to very politely say, could you please take the seat behind? And you find that finally you're on the sides. You know, you don't have any seat. Because despite the other guests coming in later on, they were made to sit right ahead. They were made to get right into the core. So there could be other people in the Vaishnav community who could get very quickly into the core. And you might be around for a long time, but very difficult to get into the core. But unfortunately, we cannot barge our way into the core. There are a couple of reasons why we can't barge. I try to analyze as to why we can't barge into the core. The key problem for getting towards the core is the critical and the attitude to analyze the other person and be judgmental about him or her. that prevents us from getting into the core. Those who are at the core definitely have overcome this this mentality of being critical and being judgmental. Of course, a lot has been said again that we should not criticize and we should not take a judgmental position. But I thought that there was one more quality that would help us being in the core, and that was confidentiality. It is always said, you know, when we are associating with senior devotees, we should not try to be critical, and it's not so easy to be in very intimate contact and serving guru because one becomes judgmental about so many things. And therefore, we need confidentiality. We need the ability to digest. As they say, we need a very large stomach. The ability to digest. In fact, I was thinking that why not we each one analyze for ourselves, what is my confidentiality index? And how do I judge my confidentiality index myself? I simply ask myself, how many times in the last 1 year or in the last 2 years have I gone about and spoken to devotees, oh, do you know about that person? This is a secret, huh? Don't tell anyone. Boom, it goes everywhere. Faster than SMS relays also. Or we try to seek out information. You know, can you let me know what has happened to that devotee? What has happened? What is going on between these two? This actually dips our confidentiality index. It will not allow us to get into the core. We have to overcome this desire to think that I am the know-all, I know everything. That's when this confidentiality index takes a dip. I was with a friend and he said, do you want me to create a tsunami? I said, my gosh, you know, this is like amazing. He said, yes, see, here I've created a tsunami, destroyed these many houses, and I saw that. And he said, do you want me to create an earthquake? So I was getting into that negative trap. I said, okay, let's see, you know what. And he created an earthquake, all buildings falling down, people crashing. And then he was creating a flood. And I said, okay, enough. Can you sort of rebuild this? And he rebuilt the whole thing up. I said, wow. But luckily, this was a game on iPod. This is called, there are a couple of very famous games around. One of them is Angry Birds. You must have heard of it. And the other, this one game, is called Pocket God. It's there on iPod. You do this, you can create a tsunami. And there you'll see all the buildings crashing, just like it may have happened in Japan. And the person is so happy, I created a tsunami. And next he created an earthquake and everything was shaking there. You know, even his iPod was shaking nicely. So this is called Pocket God. What a mentality. What a mentality. Haven't we said many times, you know, ye mere jeb mein hai, you know, ye mere jeb mein hai. And then finally, you know, these people go on to create a game which is called Pocket God because they want to have God in their pockets. They consider it so cheap. Pocket God. Actually, that is the very reason that our confidentiality index drops. Because I want to be the rocket god. Know all. I know everything. I want to know everything. And I want to broadcast everything that is happening here. I'm not able to keep things confidential. And that's when we cannot enter this core of devotees. And if we cannot enter the core of devotees, we'll be on the peripheries, our survival time, in case the power is cut off by somebody, will be very little, will be very small. Prabhupada relates a very nice story in this regard. It's not that I don't know this. It's not that all of us don't know this. He relates this 4 rupee story. He says, there was this young boy, small boy, He was running his father's grocery shop on behalf of his father. So when the client came in and handed him over 10 rupees, so the boy promptly handed him over 4 rupees. So the client objected. The change, the exchange that you are supposed to give me is 5 rupees. The boy said, I don't know. I don't know exchange. Very innocently he said, I don't know exchange. So the client was smart. He said, okay, then you give me 6 rupees. He says, no, no, father will be angry. So the boy knew. The boy knew that he had to give 5 rupees. But he gave 4 rupees. He knew that the right amount to be returned to this person was 5 rupees. But he still gave 4 rupees. So it's the 4 rupee story. I know, but I still give back just the 4 rupees. I still allow my mind to wander. I still allow my mind to, you know, share so-called confidential, the confidential things. And there are so many guests in this historical event and the historical narration of Srimad Bhagavatam. So many guests. One of the most popular and talked about guest is, of course, Durvasa Muni. If we want to learn what not to be in a guest, we could take some lessons from him, and that could be another class by itself, or a 3-hour session as to how not to be a bad guest. Of course, Durvasa Muni also, at various times, he was a tough guest to please, but Kunti Maharani pleased him. And you know, he gave a very beautiful return gift when he left you know, from there, and that return gift was so useful for Kunti Maharani. In another occasion, Krishna actually had to see that Durvasa Muni's stomach was filled when Durvasa Muni went to Draupadi in the forest when they were. When all the Pandavas were there in the forest. We can see Daksha, how he got in Lord Shiva as, you know, how he treated Shiva as guest. Protocol issues. And a whole lot of things took place just because of one small protocol issue. You know, you didn't get up when I came in. Small things. Amrish Maharaj. Once again, Durvasa was involved here. Brihaspati not being properly, you know, received by Indradev. Vishwamitra Muni, you know, as a guest, he wanted something that his host had. He wanted the cow. And, Sudama and Krishna. Oh, Krishna set another standard for guest reception. Talking of guest reception, and Sudama, you know, got in the small rice, which sent, you know, probably the entire Dwarka into raptures and ecstasy. Just that small rice. I remember having read a story about Queen Victoria. This is the early 1900s when the sun never set on the British Empire. And an African chieftain had come over to visit her in London. And they were sitting with 500 guests. And dinner was served and everything went on. Until the final thing came in, the British wash bowls. Okay, that came in, the warm water. And this African chieftain, he picked up the bowl and he drank it. Now all the 500 guests were looking at each other. There was some whispering already started. But a very nice thing took place. The queen, in all her presence of mind, she also picked up the bowl and drank it. And so also all the other 500 guests picked up the bowl and drank it. And this saved that African chieftain from sure embarrassment. There was sure embarrassment for him. If all the others had gone on to wash their hands in that bowl which this African chieftain drank, Lord save the Queen. So, this is a part of guest reception. This is a part of interaction with others that we need to guard against. It's very easy to embarrass the person ahead, as he would not know the traditions. Someone came here and he may not know that, you know, we sing the entire Brahma Samhita. Or he may not know as to how we do certain things here. In fact, I have heard of this. I will not name the sannyasi. But he generally does not partake of food which is made outside. But some of his god brothers were around. And they ordered for a juice from somewhere close by, which was not, of course, made by devotees. And the servants of this sannyasi knew that he would not probably have this juice. But because he was in the company of his god brothers and he didn't want to act, you know, me better than you, he also took the juice there. Otherwise, he could have very easily embarrassed the other god brothers sitting there. You know, I am holier than thou. The same way, when Sudama gave the chipped rice to Krishna, it could have turned into a very embarrassing situation. Already Sudama was very embarrassed. He was hiding that. As a very nice guest, which should happen whenever we go someplace, we should take some gift for the host. Even if you go to a very big person, Krishna set the standards. You know, you can take a few, 5-6 mangoes also. At least if you came to my house with 6 mangoes, I'd be very pleased. So Sudama, when he gave that chipped rice, there was like an amazing fight for that chipped rice, as if it was the Amrit that came up from Amrit Manthan. Nothing short of that. You know, Rukmini Devi demanding for it. Krishna saying, no, no, you cannot have this. And Krishna saying, what are you hiding from me? It was as if, you know, the ultimate gift. He made his guests feel so comfortable. Whenever we receive guests, we have heard of this saying. This class is still 9:15. Do I have permission till 9:20? Yes. I think I will not be able to finish. We have often heard this. Atithi Devo Bhavo. We have very, very often heard this. But unfortunately, it's not like that in this times of high speed, and you know, apart from the three miseries, there is a fourth misery, you know, Adi Devik, Adhyatmik, Adi Bhautik, and the misery of your servant having gone for a holiday to his village. And then the bigger misery is that the guest calls up and says, I want to come to your house. And I'm getting my 4 children also along with me. And when the guest comes in, you of course have to put up the show. And you ask your young child, you know, in front of the guest, why, you know, recite the prayers, recite the things that I say before we have prasadam. So the child says, no, I don't want to recite, No, you should recite when guests come. So the father actually goads the child into saying, you know, you do one thing, whatever your mother does before the guests come, you say that. So she very, very seriously folds the palm and he says, oh Lord, why did I call all these guests? So instead of Atithi Devo Bhavo, it can be said Atithi Dekho Bhago. the Devo has turned to Dekho and Bhavo has, you know, turned to Bhago. If you see a guest, run. Shut your house and say, I am off to another trip, you know, on the same days as you are coming in. I'd like to share a very instructive incident that happened with me way back in 1998 when the Bhakti Vedanta Hospital was opening. And I was on the ground floor. I was making the announcements. And I saw Radhanath Maharaj coming after the trip to the hospital. He went around. And then all of a sudden he came towards me. And he said, your announcement over the microphone is very beautiful. Sounds like, you know, the air hostess announcements on the airports. So I said, wow, Guru really knows, huh? He knows how beautiful I make announcements. And then he asked me, but what are you doing here? So I said, you know, he's already knowing that I'm making announcements. No, no, what are you doing here? So I said, okay, let me cook up something and tell him that what I'm doing here, how important an activity I'm doing here. So I said, as soon as people enter into this lobby, I guide them. I guide the VIPs to go this way and the others to go this way. And he held me close to his chest very tightly and in the softest of voice, he said, Yudhishthira, everyone who enters here is a VIP. Why are you discriminating? That was the end of my announcements. And I can never forget this incident. Never. Never ever. He said, why are you discriminating? Every guest who comes in, every person who walks in is a VIP. In fact, how well will ISKCON be known? How well will Radha Gopinath Temple, will Radha Ras Bihari Temple, will the Vallabh Vidyanagar Temple be known? Only as good as we do guest reception for the so-called smallest of person entering. Not for the VIP or the CIP. CIP is commercially important person. No. He said, you know, he said CIP, so I said, let me clarify. In fact, the hotel industry sets the standards in hospitality, but they set the standards to be quoted higher on the stock exchanges. And we have a higher goal than that also. We have a higher purpose to build this Vaishnav community, to make this community feel comfortable, to stay within us. And such beautiful activities go on in this very temple of ours. I remember Sankirtan Prabhu, for years and years there would be, you know, he would sit right behind there. And Radhakund Prabhu is so well known for taking care of guests. Our Gaurang Priya Prabhu is now become very famous for his guest receptions. Sridhama Sakha Prabhu, he makes these guest announcements, you know. We welcome those who have come for the first time, you know. Despite having heard that so many times, you know, so many times. I'm sure Sridhama Sakha Prabhu must be having to force himself to say this again and again and again, you know. But such a wonderful thing. Such a wonderful thing. In fact, I was in North India, which is very well known for its gregariousness and for its very beautiful guest reception and the big lassi glasses that they serve. I was with Raghunath Prabhu. He is one of my very senior and respectable godbrothers. Today is also his appearance day. So I would want to wish, and I would take this opportunity on that I wish him on behalf of all of you. Wonderful personality. You know, his son was getting married. His son is Kishore Anand Prabhu. He was getting married and he conducted the whole ceremony in a very Vaishnav style. In my cousin sister stays in Amritsar, and I told her that this morning I have to attend at 11 o'clock this morning I have to attend a wedding. And she said, no, you must be wrong. It must be 11 p.m. Cannot be. I said, no, it's 11 a.m. She says, no, in North India, no wedding takes place at 11 a.m. It's always 11 p.m. So he had this Vaishnav style wedding. You know, there were no suits and jackets. It was all Vaishnav dress. There was no typical bhangra going on there. It was all Jai Radha Madhav and Kirtan by some of his other god brothers. In fact, he has made such a beautiful congregation out there. He went there about, I think, 6 or 7 years ago. And with due respect, you know, the community out there in Amritsar, you know, they would have chicken for breakfast also. You know. For chutney also, they would have that. So, that's the way they are. Very, very passionate. And to talk Chaitanya Mahaprabhu out there and have a congregation, which is now nearly 400 people. Yeah, Prabhu, am I speaking right about that place? Yes, he is from Amritsar. So, he now has a congregation which is about 400 members strong. And he follows the guest reception policies that we were talking of in this historical narration. Many things can be said about how to be a good guest, and as I said, that could be just another day. I'd like to thank you very much for receiving this Srimad Bhagavatam as a guest in your ears and receiving me as a guest in this temple. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.